listening to Shop Talk with your host, Kevin Tates. Brought to you by Eastwood Tools. Everything you need to do the job right.
Hey guys, you're listening to Shop Talk. I'm your host, Kevin Tates, and we are brought to you by the Eastwood Company. Today, we get to talk to Derek White, the owner of Street Visions, Visions with a Z. It's a cool custom shop in the middle of Pennsylvania that does outstanding work. Derek's not just some fly-by-night custom car guy that decided he wanted to build a shop. He's got a 15-year heritage in history in NASCAR and professional motorsports and racing. So he's more than qualified to build awesome street cars. We talk about his career in racing, what's up with Street Visions, and what's coming down the pike for Street Visions as a shop, and current trends that we both see in the industry, as well as some things that are a little bit troubling to us. We also answer another email from a listener and hand out some more prizes, so keep those questions coming, guys. But for now, let's talk to Derek White of Street Visions on Shop Talk. Hey, you're listening to Shop Talk. I'm your host, Kevin Tates, and we're brought to you by the Eastwood Company. Do the job right with Eastwood. Well, I don't know about you guys, but we've been getting glimpses of that big yellow thing coming down through the sky down here in Tennessee, and I am dying to get out to some car shows and stuff and take my car out and stretch its legs a little bit, get it de-winterized. And that's kind of what we're talking about today. We're going to be visiting with a guy with a fantastic shop and a racing history. And to me, you know, it's fading into the distance are the days of a show car with no oil in the crankcase that has to be pushed on and off of a trailer and is basically nothing more than a big full-size display model. And to me, the trends are heading more and more towards a show driver status. And I tell you what, I like it. So today, we're talking with a shop owner that puts a serious emphasis on the driving aspect of the cars that he and his shop Street Visions builds and taps into his racing background and experience to build some serious cars. We're talking with Derek White from Street Visions. Derek, how you doing, man?
Good. How you doing, Kevin?
Yeah, not too bad. Like I said, we had some sun today. How about you guys up there in PA?
Yeah, we did. We had a good day today. It hit almost 60 degrees, so we're feeling a lot better and getting rid of all the snow up here.
Man, it does the body good. It seems like it tunes up my psyche a little bit when the weather comes out a little bit. But I got a bunch of questions I want to ask you, man. And in the first place, I looked on your website. You've got some beautiful projects going on there. You're no stranger to this stuff. How did you get started in the automotive industry?
I started automotive industry when I was 20 years old. I had a service station in Pennsylvania, and that led to I've always wanted to work for NASCAR, and that was one of my dreams, so more or less followed my passion and ended up working at NASCAR in 1996.
See, that seems to be a goal that a lot of people would have. I have had pipe dreams of that. I've visited a couple of race shops. And you talk about a high-stress, high-pressure environment. What was that like? I mean, I know there's the race time where you're on, but is there downtime in that industry, or is it all just go, go, go?
No, it's all go, 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 because everybody, from being on the outside looking in, you would look at it and say, well, the racing's over. We did 36 races, and now it's time for winter, so everybody has off in the winter. No, we rebuild every car in the winter.
Right.
And it's actually, we spend more time at the shops than we do at home.
So, right.
And it's one of them things where you just rebuild every car. You've taken every nut and bolt, everything, and redo them and get ready for the next year.
Well, we had the opportunity on one of the TV shows that I did to go to Bobby Hamilton's race shop, and it's down here in Middle Tennessee, and they weren't NASCAR. They were a league underneath, but it was a meticulous shop, and it was huge. And the only thing they didn't do in-house was build their engines, and they subbed those out. They were a Mopar-branded team. And we got to watch pit practice, and actually my co-host on the show got to be a wheelman for a second. And let me tell you what, that's a workout. Talk our listeners through, a day. Let's just focus on pit practice, a day in the life of a crew that actually changes tires and refuels. How long do those rehearsals go on?
They usually rehearsal every day for 2 hours. And It's intense, the whole 2 hours. There's no stopping. They are still doing just like they do at the racetrack. The same kind of tires, the same kind, you know, preparing all the lugs, nuts on the wheels.
Yeah.
And everything's the same way. I mean, it's no different than when you see them at the track.
And the guys, half of the crew were coming back from their daily workout, which is mandatory. They're not mm-hmm. vain people, but it was explained to us by the crew chief that you have to keep your body as in tune as the vehicle that you're prepping to race. Would you say that's an accurate statement?
Yes. What they do is they have 2 hours of pit practice, and they have at least an hour before pit practice that they have to work out to get their body in shape, ready to go. So every day they're working out. Plus, these guys are still working on the cars. You know, they're just not there for that. They actually work in the shop and do the same thing. I can tell you when you said Bobby Hamilton, I started with Bobby Hamilton Sr.
Really?
And yes, that's what I started at Morgan McClure Racing. And he was a great guy. Just let me put that out there to work with. But I carried tires for Morgan McClure, and that's what we had to do. You had to work out. You know, it was always working out.
Very cool. Well, the tire guy that was in the practice, I got to tell this story. I can't remember his name for the life of me. I wish I could. I hope he's still in it. But for some reason, he grabbed the tire wrong on the one pulling it away and rolling the other one up too, and he got his finger hooked in between two spokes, dislocated his finger. You heard him say something, just kind of under his breath, and he went on through the motions. They got the pit practice done. The car zoomed off out of the box, and then he decided that he could have pain. You know, I mean, he was so focused on it, man. It was incredible because, you know, we looked at his finger and it was kicked off at a bizarre angle. It wasn't supposed to do that. And, you know, the crew chief came over and smacked it, and then they carried him off to the hospital to make sure it wasn't broken, but it was just dislocated, the second digit. But it was just impressive. You know, not that I had a man crush on the guy, but it's like, holy cow, what focus. And I guess you have to have that, don't you?
Or you have to be 100% focused, because when you're on pit row on Sunday and them cars are coming down through there at 55 mile an hour, you had better be on your game, because especially if, you know, when you're pitting behind somebody, the guy in front of you comes, I mean, he could all but hit you. So you have got to be focused 100% at all times.
Yeah, absolutely. And because, I mean, races are won and lost in the pits, right?
Yes, very much. Yeah, I mean, you can come in, you know, you could come in fifth and you could go out 20th. You know, it all depends on your pit crew.
Yeah. Well, how many different positions have you held on a pit crew in NASCAR racing or other divisions?
In the NASCAR racing, I was just a rear tire carrier for Morgan McClure for a while. I was actually a lead mechanic.
Right.
Is my trade through the business. And I went to work for Penske, and I also worked for Rick Hendrick.
So wow.
It was very good. Yeah, I worked for Terry Labonte. It was very nice.
Really? Yeah, Terry and Bobby. I used to work for a body shop, and Terry and Bobby, my shop owner, the body shop manager, he couldn't figure out who was his favorite driver. It depended on the weekend who he was pulling for. But you're dropping some good names, man. That must have been a fantastic experience to have a goal, to set the goal, and then achieve it. And I don't know, man. Hats off to you. That's cool stuff, Terry.
Yeah, thank you. No, it was very good. It was a very great learning experience.
Well, how did you transition from that, or did you decide to end that career and open up Street Visions, or was it one day you said, hey, I'm going to open up a custom shop? How did Street Visions come about?
Well, I kind of I got a little burnout. I was on the road. I was there for 15 years, and I kind of got burnt out a little bit. And when they brought the COT car, the car of tomorrow, they call it, which mm-hmm. is a racing now, I kind of like felt that it wasn't the old racing that it used to be. It just seemed like they were getting more into the IROC series. Still love the race and still love everything, but I just didn't feel like it was like we had an advantage. Like if you could come up with a, you know, better suspension component or something, it just didn't seem the same. So I kind of got it, and I always had a passion for hot rods and custom cars. So it was time to do that. I always had them. So I thought, well, why don't I just go ahead and do this and, you know, start a different direction in life. And it was, yeah. You know, it's nice.
Well, it's nice to change gears sometimes, too. And I know we were at Nashville Fairgrounds Speedway last fall, and a little vehicle that we prepped and ended up in a practice day, and Sterling Marlin was hanging out, and you know, he still goes to that Saturday night track and races and keeps his hands in it. He's got a couple satellite shops in around the Nashville area, but it's really cool to see guys like him out and still doing what they love to do and where their passion is. They're still, I guess, fulfilling part of that dream, right?
Oh, yes, they are. It's there's a lot of guys like Sterling. It's Sterling, Ernie Irvin, and like the Burton boys. They're always there, and they have their kids that are growing up through this sport, and
yeah.
They're doing great. I mean, like Bobby Jr., he's a great kid. I'm not a kid, he's a young man now, but he's a great guy, and he's a good racer. He's a very good racer. He's a fair racer.
Yeah.
What I like about Bobby Jr. is he's like his dad. He's going to tell you what he thinks, you know.
Right.
That's good, you know.
Well, sometimes the truth hurts. I'd rather deal with somebody that's completely honest with me than somebody that tries to skirt around the truth or not hurt your feelings. I mean, I want to know where somebody stands. So I always respect somebody that's not afraid to tell the truth.
Yeah, no, you always got to just be straight out and honest. So, you know, like you said, some people don't like it. It hurts their feelings, but at least you told them the truth.
Well, and at least they know where you stand. It's up to them whether they want to accept it or not. But one of the things that I wanted to ask you, your racing background exposed you to the finest and highest level of machines, because they had to be. How does your racing heritage and your racing experience, being a lead mechanic and you know, all the different positions that you've held, how does that carry over into building streetcars, or does it?
Oh, yeah, it does very much. Just the fabrication end and the machining end, you learn so much, and the geometry of how to put suspension under a vehicle, whether it's a road course car or a street car. I mean, it all works in your favor.
Yeah.
You know, and as far as what really has helped me in having a business, my shop is like a Winston Cup shop, as clean as it is and everything. And I think that carries over to your guys, and it gives them a better outlook of how they build the car, how the car's going to finish out. You know, it was a great experience, and I carried it through to the hot rod, and to where people come into our shop and they're like, oh my God, how clean is this? It looks like a Winston Cup shop. And that's what you want.
I was about to say that, you know, of course it carries over to your guys because the standard of their work gets elevated, but your customers, your clients that come in and see the environment that their car is being built in, it can't not be a benefit to your customers and your clientele.
But we get a lot of customers that come in and say, I've been to this shop and this shop, but my God, look at your shop. I want my car down here.
Absolutely. I've done articles in newspapers and magazines on how to qualify a shop to take care of your baby or to that you can trust. And that's one of the biggest things is, number one, how do they treat you? And number two, what does the shop look like? Do they care enough about their tools that they're actually going to care about your car? So that's huge, man. It's got to be probably just, you know, the way you do things. I've got some buddies that are they're Marines. I don't say ex-Marines anymore because they're always a Marine. But
yes.
But this one kid is an engine builder, and he does circle track stuff down here. And his name is John Bouchard. He's a fantastic guy, and salute him for his service. But you watch him work around an engine, and, you know, this is carryover from the Marine Corps and racing, but everything he does is methodical and meticulous, and I don't know. That's the kind of shop that I want to work on my car.
Yeah.
So I'm going to bring you a Camaro, okay?
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, like our shop, it's great because you don't need a creeper. You know, a lot of guys use creepers. You can just lay on our floor. That's how clean
yeah.
the floors are. Just lay on the floor and fix it. You know, do what you're doing.
Yeah.
And I think the guys really appreciate it, and they like that. They go home. You know, they come home. They're semi-clean. And
mm-hmm.
they're not, like, all messed up. And, you know, you don't have 10 engines sitting here with grease all over it and everything else. Everything's nice, neat, and clean.
Well, let's face it. We probably spend more time at our job than we do at home. It's certainly more focus time, and I always have it at body shops and weekends and overtime, and you know, especially now with the TV stuff and all that kind of stuff, you end up invested in it. So it might as well be an environment that you can be proud of, and that's got to mean a lot to your guys that work with you. How many people do you have on staff?
There's four guys that work in the shop and myself, and we have one secretary.
Right. That's a nice round number, and you can, I guess, probably keep pretty good workflow. But I wanted to ask you, I've got a question written down here. I want to know what you think about the whole pro touring movement. Basically, it used to be called Gymkhana, and now it's autocross, and now it's pro touring with speed stop challenges. What are your thoughts on those types of cars that are kind of coming forth in the muscle car world?
I think it's a very good outcoming of them cars. Because it's showing diversity of, you know, not everybody can own a red 69 Camaro that's built original. But these guys have taken it to another limit, you know, as far as like the autocross and everything else. I don't know if you know Kyle and Stacy at Detroit Speed.
I know Kyle and Stacy.
They do, you know, they have really like brought the pro touring to the next level, and their autocross stuff is unbelievable. You know, they do a great job, and they do it for good guys. You know, they turn around, and every event has that, road course to it, and I think everybody likes it, and it gives you a different diversity of people.
Kyle's background as an engineer is, you know, it comes in huge, and he's such an understated guy. He's so humble and so nice when you speak with him. But he's obviously a very smart cookie, and I like what you said about they brought pro touring to the next level, and I think they did, and they've also made a lot of things accessible. You know, for instance, their mini tub kits on F-body Camaros and early first-gen Camaros as well. That's what I love about the automotive aftermarket is there's guys like that that have the chops, and guys like yourself that have the chops that bring these cars in to a level to where they can be enjoyed as well as looked at. Are you familiar with Mark Stilo?
Yes.
I think it was called Red Devil, 69 Camaro that he transposed all the Corvette, the ABS, the stability control, LSA engine, or LS9 engine, actually. What an amazing machine was that?
Oh, yeah. That was a work of art. I mean, just to be able to take the new technology and put it in an old car. And you know, the car run down the road just like you just bought it, went over to the dealership and bought a brand new Camaro. But it looks like it's, you know, first-gen Camaro.
Yeah, so there's guys like that all over the place. I want to switch gears again. I want to ask you about a car. Everybody's got a car that means something to them. I just built a little Mustang over the last couple of years that I'm really digging. Your 70 AMX is mentioned on your website. Tell us a little bit about that car.
I've always been in, I guess, the oddball, as you could say, as far as cars, and I always loved the AMX. I've always loved it. I bought the car and redid it years ago and got to where I was going racing. I didn't have time to do anything with it. And then I sold it. In 1996, I sold it. And I bought it back in 2006. The guy put 10 miles on it. And I was like, okay, you know.
10 miles?
10 miles on the car. And I go, why didn't you drive it? Because it's just too nice. I didn't want to drive it. So we got it, redid the car because I wanted to bring it up to date. And I don't know, I just love the car. It's a good car. It's my perfect advertisement car for our business.
Right.
For one, it's different, so everybody wants to look at it. And I just enjoy the car. You know, there's nothing like getting out and going out there and, you know, blowing the tires off of it and having fun. And, you know I can still show it.
Well, that's the best thing. I mean, you know that you can pull it into the paint shop and you can buzz it down and paint it again. The saying is there's more paint in the can. But interesting that the guy that bought it from you, that you bought it back from, was afraid of it. And I don't know, man. That I'm glad to see people that aren't afraid of their cars. I remember my dad worked at an AMX dealership up in Western Canada, and I remember as a little kid driving up in front of the dealership, or it was a it was an AMX showroom, American Motors dealership, and there was a the tri-colored AMX in the showroom that I just couldn't take my eyes off of. And I just think for a two-seater muscle car, I think they got it right. I think it was just a wicked cool car, great looks, great aesthetics. I don't know, one of my favorite muscle cars for sure.
Yeah, it's just, I think it was a little bit ahead of its time, the way it was styled and all, and that's why I don't think it went over too good. It's good as what now the cars, the AMXs are really getting popular, and, you know, they're starting to bring the money. You start seeing them creep up at, like, the Barrett Jacksons, the Mecums, to where they're creeping up to bringing the money back to where, like, you know, the Camaros, the Corvettes are, and the Mustangs. So they're coming back, you know, and they're harder to find.
Well, hopefully the aftermarket will do like it did with Mustang and Camaro and some of the Pontiacs. When the demand is there, the aftermarket kicks in and supplies, and that's just the rule. And maybe with the popularity of some of these, as you say, oddball cars that are arguably, you know, historically significant, you know, maybe companies like AMD and people like that will start popping panels for these cars again instead of us having to go through, you know, junkyards and find Arizona cars to rebuild ours with.
It's funny because everybody's like, oh, the suspension's on them and all. And actually, there's a company out there now, Control Freaks, that turn around and make all aftermarket suspension for AMCs.
Really?
For pro touring. Oh, it's so cool. Yeah, we're doing a little 67 Rambler Rogue in the shop now with all Control Freaks underneath it. And it's
very
gonna be
cool.
A very killer pro touring Rambler convertible.
Excellent. Well, you guys that are listening that are AMX guys, Control Freaks, check them out online. I'm sure they got a website.
Yes, they do. Very nice one.
Good deal. And by the way, we're talking with Derek White of Street Visions and shop owner, 15-year NASCAR veteran, interesting cat to say the least. And we've got a listener question to ask here in just a little bit, and maybe, Derek, you could help with this. I'm sure it's right up your alley.
Okay.
But I wanted to ask you, we talked prior, and I wanted to ask you how you got introduced or acquainted with the Eastwood Company.
Eastwood Company, I've always bought products from them. And they were very, you know, their stuff is very good. They have very good products. But now I'm only 10 minutes from them. There's a gentleman that works there, Mike Allman, and he's a friend of mine.
Yeah.
And he turned around and he said, look, why don't you come up and, take a look at our stuff, come through, and they gave me the whole tour of the place. They're very nice. Great guys. And we just really hit it off, and I hit it off with, all the guys in there. Nick, their marketing guy, and everybody. And we just started working together. And some of the stuff that they make, we try a lot of it, and we give them our feedback. And that's what they want.
Right.
They want to know yes or no, your shop, tell us if it's any good or not. And there's some stuff that we do, and we refer to the Eastwood Company. Hey, maybe you want to try this. And it works great. I mean, them guys are super guys. We do some videos for them on the YouTube videos. We spray different paints and different primers and sealers, and they come down and video it. They have a guy, Randy, that does all their video and does YouTube videos, and they're just unbelievable. The guys are great to work with.
Well, that's great that they're that close to you. I didn't realize that they were right around the corner from you guys, and I know all of those people, I mean, I've had an association with the Eastwood Company since 1999. They picked up some of my instructional DVDs, or back when they were VHSs back then, and I've been working with them ever since and buying stuff from them like you since before that. But what I like about them now seems like more than ever, and of course this has turned into a circular commercial about Eastwood, but they seem to be really focused on not just selling stuff to people, but empowering people with the knowledge and how to use it and the courage to go forward. So I think it's a great place to buy stuff, and I don't know, I'm glad that they ask for your honest opinion too, because that matters. You know, when you're doing a review, people want to know, and they want to trust what you say.
Yeah, they do. And it's just like, I know you've done a lot of classes there, Kevin, that you've done for Eastwood and stuff, and we've done some classes for them, you know, of how-to videos and stuff, and they just help you out so much.
Well, and you and I are no different than the guy calling in off the street, and I've seen it there. I've seen their call center in action, and they honestly want to help. They don't just want to defer the customer service call over to somebody else. They want to make sure that you're having a good experience, and I think that's rare these days.
Well, yeah, the whole thing is if you have a problem and you call Eastwood, they're going to fix the problem. I mean,
yep.
It doesn't matter what it costs them. They're going to fix the problem, even if it means you might have got a defective part from them or a piece of equipment or something. They will fix whatever it is to make you happy.
Yeah, a buddy of mine uses their TIG welder down here in Tennessee, and he doesn't just use it. He uses that welder, and I think, I don't know what happened, maybe like an invert or something on the inside messed up. And so he called customer support, and he was almost out of warranty. And they went ahead and they shipped him a brand new unit, paid for the return card on his. He didn't have to pay for anything. They replaced his TIG within a couple of days. And, you know, with no questions, they said, well, you bought it from us. We got a warranty. We're going to take care of you. End of the sentence. And you can't ask for more than that.
Oh, yeah, that's just the way they are. I got to tell you a little story about everybody, you know, when you say Eastwood, everybody thinks they're in California.
Right. Okay?
And I don't know why, but they do. And it's just the way it is. There's a gentleman that lives 4 miles from Eastwood. He called and he ordered a welder. So they sent it to him. And so then he calls and he says, well, you know, I had a little problem with it. Could you help me? And the guy says, yeah, why don't you, and he looked it up online, the guy's address and everything. He says, why don't you just drive it over here and we'll fix it right away. And the guy says, I'm driving away from California, all the way to California. Here he's 4 miles away. He didn't even know it. And they went over and picked it up at the guy's house.
Oh, wow.
And brought the welder back and fixed it for him and took it back. That's what kind
That's
of people
awesome.
They are.
I bet that blew his mind.
Yeah, well, he thought they were in California. And here they're 24 miles from his house.
Yeah.
And, It's just a funny story because, you know, some people don't actually know where you're at.
No, Now, especially nowadays with the internet, it almost doesn't matter where you're at, and you know,
yeah,
unless you're dealing with hard parts. But, you know, and that could be a blessing and a curse, but, you know, that's a whole other conversation. Anyway, I wanted to ask this listener question. We had a fellow email us a question. And by the way, you guys listening, if you email a question and we ask it on the air, I think the prize package is up to like $500 worth of Eastwood credit or it's major, guys. Come on, send me some questions in. But David Jones did. This is David Jones from Thomasville, Georgia. And his question is it when you're installing a roll cage, there's kits and you can bend your own tubes, but when you're installing a roll cage in a car, is it better to MIG weld or TIG weld the roll cage? And Derek, I want to lean on your experience with this. Have you got an opinion with this question?
Yeah, I do. It all depends on what you're going for. If you're just going to, some guys that just want to go out and do Saturday night racing and stuff like that, we'll just MIG weld a cage together. Or if they just want to, you know, but if you want the best weld and the prettiest weld and the most strength, you should TIG weld it.
Right.
You know.
Well, I know that when you go through tech, you can't wipe Bondo over top of the weld, so they're going to be exposed. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, if you go through tech and you have any kind of Bondo, anything on the welds, they're going to want, you're not going to pass.
Right.
You know, but
for that reason alone, a TIG welder is much more precise, and it's a much cleaner-looking weld, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very pretty. It's very nice. It holds together great. It all depends on what you're looking for. I personally would TIG weld a cage in.
I mean, there you have it. I don't think you can get a better answer than that, David. You heard it from the best. You heard it from Derek at Street Vision. So thanks for emailing in your question, and we'll be back in touch with David and get him some prizes. So awesome, and thanks for your help with that, Derek.
Yeah, no problem. He'll enjoy his Eastwood, everything he gets from Eastwood. He'll enjoy it, whatever he picks out.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, I know I want to go back to you said you had 4 or 5 people there working. If this is too personal a question, just tell me. You don't have to tell me specific ages, but what age range is your staff in? How old are these guys?
I got one. The youngest one is 19, and the oldest guy is 52.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's in between. The thing I see the hardest, Kevin, is the older guys, you know, they know what's going on. They enjoy it and they like it. But the young guys, I have this one guy, Max, that's working for me. He went through WireTech, everything. He's a very talented guy, very talented young guy. And I just would like to see more guys like him into the business. It just seems like it's sort of a dying breed. But I just see this kid when he came to me, he went to WireTech, he come to me and he come and talk to me. I just saw so much potential in this guy. You know, he's one of them kind of guys that you just say, I know that he knows how to do this. And he just needs to be led the right way.
There's no substitute for experience. And, you know, when you just come out of a tech school like that, you can't have the experience that somebody that's been working in the field for 10 years has. So talent goes so far, but you have to have somebody, you have to find people that are willing to, you know, it's an old worn out phrase, paying your dues, but you got to find guys that are willing to suck it up and get humble and pay their dues. I mean, it seems to me that's the hardest thing to find in these young guys that want to be automotive rock stars anymore.
Oh yeah. And that's the thing. The worst part is you get some of them, you know, they want to plug and play with their computers. And that's, you know, that ain't going to do it. This is a hands-on craftsmanship industry.
Mm-hmm.
And I just saw this young guy that really has it. He's got the talent. And then you get, you know, the guys in the shop, they love the young guy. He's very energetic. He listens to the guys, the older guys. He listens to what they say. And you don't find that too much in a young guy. But I just wish that the younger generation would understand that they need to do more of getting involved in the hot rod kind of craftsmanship. I just really wish I could see more of that.
Well, I've always said that if all of this other stuff that I'm doing dries up and I went back to work in collision shops, I would be just fine because I like the work. I was never without a job, and I made a pretty good buck doing it. And if you acquire a skill set that you can utilize and work with, then you're never going to be without a job. And my old man taught me that a long time ago. He said, Kevin, you're not going to get rich in a body shop, but you're never going to be without work as long as people have personal vehicles. So, it's great to think, to have goals like I want to be in NASCAR someday because those goals can be achieved. Or for me, you know, I want to have a car in a magazine. I have finally had a car in a magazine. All those goals can be achieved. But to me, there's a stigma with young people in this country about working in skilled trades and that it's less than somehow. And I think it's shameful, actually. I think somebody needs to be standing on the rooftop saying, hey, there's no shame in working with your hands. There's no shame in getting dirty for a living and taking pride and the ownership that you take in being in the service industry or the construction industry or the, you know, road construction, whatever have you. To me, I think somebody needs to focus on that and beat the drum and say, hey, come on, back to center just a little bit. It's okay to work with your hands. You don't have to have a double law degree with a minor in political science, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you really think about it. Up till 10, 15 years ago, that's how America was built.
Absolutely.
You know? And now it just seems like it's gone to the wayside.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know, and maybe things will change. I see a lot of really talented young guys coming up through the ranks and guys that are fearless, and you know what I mean by that, guys that aren't afraid to try stuff and dive in and learn the skills and make mistakes, because that's honestly what it takes too. But I'm encouraged by some of the young guys that I see, but I also know that, you know, a lot of us are getting long in the tooth and salt and pepper on the chin. And
yeah.
I don't know, man. We got to open this up to young people and make them understand that it's a great way to make a living.
Well, the thing is, Kevin, I think people need, you know, they need people behind them with confidence to tell them they can do it. And
mm-hmm.
There's a lot of young guys that have the talent that won't exercise it, you know.
Right.
I don't know if it's just like they get in a lazy stage or something, but there's a lot of young talent out there, and I think they're afraid to actually step forward and say, I can do this. You know, and that's what really gets you going, because you see somebody that has talent and they're like, they're wasting their talent just playing video games or doing nothing, and you know they could do this. You know, it was not that hard. They could do it, and they could be very good at it.
Well, put yourself back at 19, 20 years old. Was there anybody in your life that really kind of mentored you or took you under their wing and said, listen, Derek, here's the way you got to do that? Is there anybody that was instrumental in you becoming who you are today?
Yeah, there was a gentleman that he wasn't my grandfather, but he was all but like a grandfather to me. He had a Sonoco station. His name was Leon Ziegler, and he just, I mean, he drilled me. Like, you got it. You can do it. You know, There's nothing in this world you can't do if you put your mind to it.
Yeah.
And 24/7, I was with this guy a lot, and he would drill me, like, this is what you're going to do. Well, I ended up taking over his Sonoco station.
Wow, okay.
So, you know, that was good, you know, and he taught me, like, how to treat people and, you know, have respect for people. That's all you got to do.
Well, and respect for yourself as well. And through that comes hard work, and the work ethic is developed and all those things. Well, it sounds like he had a pretty major influence on your life. That's very cool.
Oh, yes, very much. Oh, I know what I want to ask you. Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
Now, say you weren't going to do what you're doing now. Would you go back to playing music?
No. See how long it took me to think about that?
Yeah, okay.
Okay, it's an old adage. A fellow walks down the road in the country, and he comes across this guy that is hitting himself in the forehead with a piece of wood. About every 4 or 5 seconds, just thump. And he hits himself in the forehead with this piece of wood. This guy walks up on him. He doesn't know whether he's crazy or not. He walks up on him, and he said, and the guy's hitting himself in the forehead with this piece of wood. And he said, what are you doing? And the guy stops and looks at him. He says, I'm hitting myself in the forehead with this piece of wood. And he said, why on earth are you doing that? And the guy looked at him, and he said, because it feels so good when I finally stop. So that's the music industry for me. And, you know, and I worked hard. Man, I worked hard at it. You know, I right out of high school, I jumped on the road with rock bands and really put my heart and soul into it. And about the time that I got really good at what I was doing, well, the music industry changed. It's on a big cycle, you know, and the rock music that I loved and that I grew up listening to and that I tried to emulate, honestly, in the songs that I wrote and the groups that I was in wrote, it went out of vogue. It was when Nirvana first hit. And,
yeah.
You know, in hindsight, I liked their music, but I hated those guys because they ruined my record deal.
Yeah, they ruined your record. But you know what? It's something that's like, I know, like, you were – like same as me, 80s rock band type guy, but you were right there, and that's the thing. You were all but, you know, the Nirvana.
Yeah,
you were right at where the Nirvana was.
Well, yeah, and we had record company showcases, and they said, hey, you guys are really good. We're not signing this type of act anymore. Look at these guys. See how they look. See how they sound. If you can do this, come back in 6 months, and we'll talk again because you guys are a really good group. Well, it was too late, you know. I could not be something that I wasn't. And, you know, if you're an artist, you got to be true to yourself. And we envisioned ourselves as artists, at least, you know, tried to be anyways. And it was just, you know, and I had always set a time in my brain that by the time I was 30 years old, if I hadn't achieved a certain level of success, then I was going to hang it up and focus on something that I thought that I could have success in. I didn't want to be the guy that's 55 years old still thinking that he's 25, you know, because it's a young person's business. And it's tough, man. There's enough obstacles in front of musicians, and age doesn't need to be another one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is. I mean, it's like I always said, I'm going to retire when I'm 50.
Yeah.
I passed that.
Yeah. Well, the good thing for me with music is that now when I play, because I do play on, you know, the little weekend band every once in a while down here in Nashville, it's for the love of it. So
Oh, yeah.
It freed me from the pressure of the music business. and it gave my love of music back to me. So, you know, I don't think that I would get back into that. You know, there's a lot of other dynamics with it. I'm married now. I really dig my wife. She's a great person, and, you know, I don't want to be on the road. I don't want to travel. You know, certainly there's travel with business, but, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, because, I mean, I traveled 15 years, and it gets tired after a while. But one thing I can say, and to these young guys that are out there, if you love cars, you love hot rods, you love to do this kind of work, where else can you go learn a skill, a trade, and get paid for it and enjoy your hobby?
Exactly.
It's like the dream job.
Well, and, you know, you can always do stuff on the side. Even if you don't want to do it full time, you can make side money. And I don't know, it introduces you to the community of people that do what you and I do, build cars and work on cars. And it's a really interesting, very kind and giving community. It's people that love to help people because we have common ground and common territory. So I absolutely agree with you. Any of the young guys listening to Shop Talk today, if you have an inkling, jump in and do it. You can always change your mind. But once you have that skill set, but once you have that skill set in your back pocket, you can always go back to it as well.
Yes, and enjoy it. I mean, and it's not like a job that somebody's going to be pounding down your throat all day long.
No, there's creative freedom in it, absolutely, especially when you're building cars for people. And you know, it's neat. There's a lot of gratification in it because you're fulfilling somebody else's dream, too, that maybe doesn't know how to build a car and making a living while you're doing it. So there's just an awful lot of good reasons to get into it.
Yes, very much.
Excuse me, tickle. Well, I'm going to be coming up to PA probably pretty soon, and hopefully I'll get a chance to swing by your shop. But I can't wait to see it. I want to ask you one more question about Street Visions. And by the way, if you're listening, you want to get online, go to Street Visions. It's spelled with a Z instead of an S on the Visions part. StreetVisions.com. Check out some of the rides that Derek and those guys have built and have in progress. Beautiful work, my friend. Beautiful, beautiful work. What do you see as the future of Street Visions? Have you got a long-term plan, or are you just going to do it until you're tired of it, or what's coming down the road for Street Visions?
Well, we're actually doing this car right now, and we're trying to take our shop to the next level. I honestly would like to be a household name, like you hear Chip Foose, and all them guys. I actually would like to. You know, when you say hot rods, I'd like to hear somebody say Street Visions.
Yeah.
And our thing is, with the passing of Boyd, I honestly tell everybody, Boyd had probably the best hot rod show out there,
mm-hmm.
Boyd Coddington, because he showed you real hot rods. He showed you what they were doing and how they were doing it.
Yeah.
And they had minimal drama in there, and it was just, and I know some of it's TV and you got to do it. But to do a show like that was great because they showed you everything they were doing, how they were doing it, and then giving it to the customer, unveiling the car. It's not like some of the shows you see now. There's all drama, and our vision is maybe one day have a TV show, and to build hot rods not on a level like that. We want to build them to the level like Chip Foose, Boyd Coddington, the Ring Brothers, Troy Tremaine. I mean, we want to build cars like that.
Yeah.
And we want to be out there like they are. And I think we're headed this direction. I think this new car we're doing to be debuted at SEMA in 2014 will put us right where we need to be.
So where's it going to be at SEMA show in 14?
The car actually sitting? I don't know.
Yes. Are you going to have your own booth or...?
No, we're probably going to have one of the vendors have it at their booth.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, man, that's a huge honor. So that's going to happen right now. You're going to have it out there?
Yeah, we're going to have it there in November. We're actually building the car right now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the thrash. I've been through that. And in 12, I debuted my little Mustang out there with the Heat Shield products, and it used all Eastwood products on it from the bare steel up, and And so it was a cool experiment for me. It was the first time I've ever done that with the Eastwood products. I've used them before, but not everything. So it was a mad thrash that summer of 2012 to get the car ready, and there was still some issues with it. But I trust you guys are going to be a little more ahead of the eight ball than I was with Jaded. But, well, good luck, man. And, you know, I applaud you for having goals, because without goals, we're directionless. And you know, there's nothing to say that you can't achieve that. There's no rule that says that you can't get what you want. You can't get the TV show. All you got to do is want it bad enough, you know?
Yeah, if you want it bad enough, you'll get it, and you work hard at it. It's funny because my 13-year-old daughter always says, "Dad, you have the word failure is not in your vocabulary."
No.
And it's not.
And what a wonderful example for a father to set to their children, to your daughter. That's fantastic, man. Well done.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, is there any companies that you want to give a shout-out to, any sponsors that you wanted to mention or say thanks to? I know we're going to be broadcasting this on iTunes, so a lot of people hopefully will listen to it. Are there companies in the aftermarket that have helped you out?
Yeah, there's a lot of companies. One is the Eastwood Company. You know, they've helped me out very much. Pace Performance. Chuck over there and his guys are great. I mean, they've done a hell of a lot for us. Visual Impact Performance. They do all the serpentine systems out of North Carolina. Melissa and Tom down there, they're great people to work with. They do a wonderful job. Their workmanship is excellent. Advanced Plating. I'm sure you know Steve Tracy.
I know Steve very well, yes.
And he does a great job. I mean, if you want chrome plating done, I mean, there's the king right there, you know, for the plating. And Memphis Car Stereos. The guys down there, Andy, he's been a great guy, a great help with us guys as far as doing our cars and, you know, helping us with the stereos and everything. They've been great. And we really enjoy it. Actually, DuPont has helped us out a lot. That's one of our main paints that we use. And now it's called Exalta now. They help us out very much. We have, you know, special project cars and stuff they help out. We also take cars to their shows. They display their paint products and everything. So they really helped us out. There's been a lot of nice people out there to help us.
Well, it's a two-way street with that. You know, if they invest in you and you provide them with an example that they can point people to and say, like in the example of Exalta or formerly DuPont, if they can say, hey, that's our coating system on that car. Look at that thing. And it's in this magazine. It's had a feature on that TV show or something like that. That's how that stuff works. You know, a lot of people think that sponsors and it's free parts. There's nothing free about free parts, and no. You know what I'm talking about. you got to give back. You got to give a prime example of why that part is on your car and represent that company. So, you know, it sounds like you do that very well because you've got a lot of managing or a lot of partners that help you. And I don't know, it sure is nice to be in an industry where people can believe in each other, isn't it?
Oh yes, it is, and it's great because it's. You know, Kevin, like you call somebody and you can trust that you're going to get the part and you trust their part anyway, the quality and everything. But it's just nice to know people. And when you're at, like, SEMA, you're at other trade shows and car shows, they remember you. It's not like they just forgot about you, you know.
Yep. Excellent. Well, that's why we do what we do, is because of the community that we're in, I think. I think I can speak for both of us on that level. But
yes, very much.
Yeah. Well, Derek, I want to thank you for sharing of your time. I know you're a busy guy. Guys that are listening, go to streetvisions.com and check out some of the fantastic work that they do over there. And I hope to talk to you soon. I'm coming up to PA at the end of this month, and hopefully we'll get some time to come over there. And I just want to say out loud, thanks for doing what you do and for being a part of our Shop Talk show.
Yeah, I want to thank you very much, Kevin, for having us and me, myself, and actually Street Visions on your show.
Absolutely. We're proud to do it. And proud that you're associated with the Eastwood Company, too. So we're going to sign off. I want to thank everybody for listening. Thanks to Derek for being a part of the show. And remember, do the job right with Eastwood. We'll talk to you soon. Well, Street Visions is a shop that I would most definitely put one of my cars there if I wasn't working on it myself. Well, Derek certainly knows what it takes to have a successful shop, from the great attitude that he has and shares with his employees, as well as an immaculate shop and outstanding work. You can't beat that. Thanks, Derek, and thanks to the crew of Street Visions for sharing him and letting him be a part of our Shop Talk program. So in the meantime, keep those questions coming. We're giving away prizes like crazy. I'm your host, Kevin Tates, and you're listening to Shop Talk, brought to you by Eastwood. Do the job right with the Eastwood Company. Check out everything at the Eastwood.com website. Eastwood has what it takes to do the job right. And you know me, I like to do the job right. Thanks for listening to Shop Talk. I'm Kevin Tates.